Not Twitter, Yammer. Same, same. Whatever. We're going to go ahead and get started. It is 9 o'clock on the dot, and I don't want to waste any time. So real quick, we're going to be talking about building amazing end-user experiences on SharePoint 13 and Office 365, or at least that's the title of it. I'm Byron Baker. I'm the Chief Creative Officer at Blue Rooster, and...
Todd Ray, Vice President of Strategy for Blue Rooster.
So we really thank you guys for coming out. Big party last night. Did you guys go? I didn't. I was in bed early. Anybody get on the racetrack? Yeah? Did you go fast, like 25 miles an hour fast, or 100? That's legit. That's legit. It's kind of cool. It was nothing. That was just the morning commute. Sweet, sweet. So today, that's the direction. We're going to go through a couple things. So just kind of a quick calibration on what is UX. It still kind of blows my mind that I still get questions about what is it. I've been in the booth most of the week and had a gentleman, I really hope he's not here, stop by and go, what's Unix and why does it have anything to do with SharePoint? Took me a sec, and then I looked at the shirt, and I was like, oh, okay. So we're going to do that. I've got a series of guidelines that me and my team use. This is kind of how we approach our projects. These are not, you know, must-do. These aren't gates that we must achieve in each and every project, but these are kind of best practices and guidelines that we use. I'm going to run through two case studies, a couple of real-world examples of what we've done, and then at the end, we're going to get out of the box. So we'll just kind of leave that at that. There we go. So without further ado, let's jump into this. I can't, but I bet he can. Testing. I'm wearing a V-neck. It doesn't work too well. Is that annoying yet? Okay. I will stand straight. All right. Have you seen our commercial? It's been playing in the various hotel rooms. So let's switch over. And I'm gonna play this just to get started.
Believe unicorns, leprechauns, UFOs, Bigfoot, a SharePoint site that's so easy and intuitive that it's a pleasure to use. Blue Rooster makes user-centered solutions that drive faster adoption and higher return on investment. Believe Blue Rooster.
Okay, so, oh gosh, back to this, must stand center. Do you believe in SharePoint sites that don't suck? Can I see a raise of hands? Who believes in SharePoint sites that don't suck? I've got three more shirts. Raise your hand, keep your hand up if you have ever actually experienced one. Oh! Tried, man, sorry. Sweet. So I do have I just want to understand a little bit about who I have in the audience here. How many designers? How many fellow designers? Stand tall, stand proud. Thank you, my brothers and sisters. There's few and far between here, it feels like. Anyone else not in IT? Kind of on the business side, communications, PR, other stuff? Welcome, thank you. So what is UX and how is it amazing? I've been doing web design and design for the better part of two decades now. Doesn't look it, but it is true. And UX kind of came out of the fold you know, 10 years ago or so. It kind of got defined as a term. Prior to then, it was just, you know, graphic design and web design. And all of a sudden, we started looking at people's behaviors and understanding how that came into play as part of those designs and part of those solutions. Donald Norman and Jakob Nielsen, Jesus, that really changes as I turn, define user experience. They founded a group called Nielsen-Norman Group, and they define user experience as this. It encompasses all aspects of the end user's interactions with the company, its services, and its products. They go on to say that you must meet the exact needs of the customer without fuss or without bother. That you need to have simplicity and elegance. You need to produce products that are a joy to use and a joy to own. And I think these are pretty important pieces, pretty important additions to what the definition is. So with that, let's play a little game now. So I'm going to go ahead and put up a couple of designs. So I was going to call these experiences, but really they're just designs because they're just flat. It's just a screenshot up on the screen. And I want a little bit of participation. So I want you guys to kind of yell out, you know, is that good? Is it bad? Laugh, frown, cry, whatever. So we're going to start here. Hey, good. So far, so good. I don't know, anybody else get this? Yeah, that's awesome. I think my favorite part is that we finally hit friendly URLs, so that's cool. We've got the SharePoint conference and my first time experience, so thank you. We got a nice little 504 error. Errors are tricky. This one's a tough one. I prefer friendlier errors that I can actually do something with, but that doesn't always happen. So that's enough on SharePoint conference digs. I went back a little bit, because I think in understanding user experience and design and all that stuff, it's important to put yourself kind of, you know, back in the shoes. So this is a screenshot from Amazon in April of 2000. It's pretty awesome. Goes way back. Good or bad? Bad. Even in the day, I thought this was bad. I remember when this came out, I was furious. And I think the gentleman over here, I was actually working with him at the time. I blew my mind that they put two layers of tabs up there. I was furious as a designer, furious. I never, ever put tabs in a design again as soon as I saw this. But there are some good things here, and I do want to call those out. We've got so as of like 2000, it was pretty groundbreaking, you know, to be able to think that it was still fairly new to go online and buy something and have it delivered to my house. And it could really be almost anything. But what we've got here is some pretty cool stuff. So you've got some trending topics, and we've got the start of recommended products. And this is well before, you know, Amazon turned into what they are today, where it's like you search for a product, and then all of a sudden, your entire recommended products changes. You know, so this was, you know, almost, I guess, 14 years later, and what Amazon's doing and where they're at now. Good or bad? I think they're doing pretty good. I think Amazon's got an interesting story that they just keep evolving and keep going. And I think things are pretty easy to find. I'm also a kind of a power user. I buy too much stuff. Uber. Any Uber users beyond me? This is my absolute favorite app in the world right now, so I'm a little partial to it. So I'm going to go ahead and say good. But it's not good necessarily because of the reasons you might think. It's amazing to be able to think that I can just click a button and it says, oh, I'm going to come pick you up now at this location. And that's pretty cool. But what I really love is when I went to go add a new credit card to it, and you just click add payment up there. And it's not the, you know, okay, I could type in my credit card, but my favorite thing about this is that little scan your card button underneath it, which then allows me to take a picture of my card and automatically puts it into the account. Thank you, Uber. Thank you for making my life easier than you already were. Just gonna let this sit for a sec. SharePoint. I know, right? It's scary stuff.
What's wrong with it, Byron?
Nothing's wrong with it, Todd. This is good. SharePoint 2007. We all used it, right? Maybe some of you were actually on the product team. Sorry. I don't know if you're here. SharePoint 2007 was kind of my start to SharePoint. So I'm just going to kind of throw that out there. I met up with a gentleman over here named Kevin, and I joined Blue Rooster. And he said, Byron, I want to take SharePoint beyond just a fancy X drive. And I want to turn it into something people can actually use. And that means we have to design for it and do things that people say we can't do. And so I said, all right, sure. Let's give that a shot. Get some feedback there. So SharePoint 2007 out of the box wasn't all that great. It provided a good platform, a good base to work from. But we turned that into much larger user-centric solutions. Things that, were targeted to a specific use. In this case, it was a Chevron portal for managing, what was it? You were kind of...
Marketing information.
And getting that kind of the beginning of crowdsourcing, getting people all across the org inputting and contributing to the future of what's going on there. Gets better, I swear. SharePoint 2010 profile. We were pretty excited. SharePoint 2010 was coming out. There's all this talk about social. Anyway. We had this SharePoint 2010 profile page. There was kind of this little newsfeed thing there. But you did have an org chart, so that was cool. And we thought we could do better with that. Make that a little bit more user-centric. Create something that somebody could actually use. We built our own microblogging tool on top of SharePoint because we didn't feel the one that was there was sufficient, and we didn't like the others in the market. We brought in aspects of gamification. How can I finish and complete my profile? How can we entice people to start using this portal a little bit more? And we fast forward to today. Today, the reason we're all here, Office 365, SharePoint 13, flat design, the ribbon's still there. But we're getting better. We're moving in the right direction. But out of the box, day one, start a new site, there's still very little for me to know what to do with. And so we're trying to put even more on top of it, trying to meet those design expectations for today's needs. So what we're going to dive into here in just one sec, I have one more quick sample, are some of those methods, some methodologies, best practices, guidelines that me and my team use. These are fairly tried and true. They work in SharePoint as well as anywhere else. But I think they're good to hear and important for what we're doing. Okay, raise of hands, iPhone users, since day one. Yeah, all right, cool. Windows? Non-Microsoft employee Windows. Android. Sweet, welcome. That's not too bad, that's pretty good. I expected there to be a little bit more of a gap, so that's good, nice and even. Cool, so what I think is interesting is that there is a gap, right? That we all have different expectations and different opinions. That design is subjective, and we hold that personally. What I think is good design, Todd may not. And that's perfectly okay. That's actually good. And so how do we design for that? How do we design for moving targets? How do we achieve success when something's constantly changing? And I think that what we're going to dive into, it's a good foundation. It's a good start. So first and foremost, this should be no surprise to anyone, if it is, sorry, and that is to have a clear value proposition, to get everyone on a given team united under the same front, to understand the needs, and this should go fairly deep. This shouldn't be superficial. So what I've got up here are a couple examples. So I'm actually just gonna read through these. The current company intranet is outdated and frustrating for both end users and content authors. When users need to find information, it's a challenging process that leads to a loss of productivity. When content authors try to update content, they're discouraged by the process and dissatisfied by the end result. So getting everybody unified under a given problem statement And getting that understood, right? So the entire project team, the executive team, everybody knows what's going on here and what the problem at hand is. Okay. Set a project goal. So, company, right? Blue Rooster, desires to build a portal that is user-centric. It allows the corporate push of information. The delicate balance may be measured through the portal usage, analytics, as well as office surveys and informational interviews after launch. And this is important. We're going to dive into, you know, quantitative, qualitative, subjective, objective reporting a little bit later, but it's good to have that full circle, the understanding. And finally, executive buy-in. This is critical. Improve the efficiency and effectiveness of company employees by making knowledge, systems, processes, and contact information readily available with intuitive tools, said the CEO. I like to put quotes like this, you know, when we're kicking off a project and we're meeting with the project team, it's great to get a CEO or a senior executive in the room and get a quote like this out of them. And then we put that in every single design document, in every single piece that we put back to the project team to make sure that we're constantly measuring back to that. Item number two is do your homework. So this is the research side of things. We have a fully dedicated research team that's, you know, they go out and talk to people. And this is really important. So this is a kind of a big slide. But we're going to talk about, you know, subjective and objective reporting. So subjective is my feelings. So these are very personal and held true to me. So mine are going to be definitely different than Todd's. We have objective reporting, which is going to exist regardless of my opinions and feelings. And so we have qualitative and quantitative, or quantitative and qualitative data. You know, quantitative is data, it's numbers, it's analytics. It's you know, you can't really argue it. Well, you can, but qualitative data is words. So let's go ahead and put this to practice in something that is very true to my heart. Kind of talk about how this works out. Is that a box of donuts? Yes. That is objective qualitative reporting. How many donuts are left? None. That is quantitative objective. How would you rate the donuts? 5 stars. Quantitative matrix. Quantitative, subjective reporting. And finally, the donuts are that good? Best in the world. Objective, qualitative reporting. And so it's really important to walk all the way around the problem. And you do this by multiple ways. One is getting in front of users. As many as you can. But when I say that, it is across the entire organization. It's not a numbers game. You don't want to meet, you know, 500 people. That's somewhat crazy. You could. Depends on how big the problem is, I guess. But what you want to do, I kind of go by a rule of eights. I try to get about 8 people into a focus group. I try to do about 8 focus groups, and I try to make sure that that is a good cross-section from the entire organization, you know, from technical to communications to PR, finance, you know. If it's a manufacturing company, it's great to get people off the floor.
So how do you approach this if you've got, say, 10 business units that each have 10,000 people in them? How do you really represent the different functions as part of this sort of exercise?
Yeah, so we have to kind of generalize that a little bit. You want to get people doing similar tasks, people that have similar maybe challenges within their job and how they need to address the systems and tools that are in place. But even more, you know, when you conduct these don't need to be formal or overly formal. Keep them informal. We do them, you know, sometimes in the midday, depending on the company or the client. Sometimes we do them in the evening, and provide snacks or drinks and get people kind of talking and more comfortable. I find that extremely useful. Of course, we record and video and document the entire thing so that we can reference back, that we can pull snippets and show those outtakes to the project team, to the client, and bring that all back around. And then, of course, there's the analytical data. So I am showing Google Docs at a Microsoft conference. That happened. But this is a free tool. There's tons out there. WebTrends, I may be in here. They got a booth downstairs. They do some great stuff. But really, it's just getting in and starting to understand how often the site's being used. And this is a piece of information that, again, you're walking around that problem trying to understand it. This is one of my more favorite views to look at when I start looking at analytical data, though. And this is a click path or a user path, a navigation flow. And what you start understanding is seeing who came in where and kind of the standards, the averages of how many people clicked to this next page or that next page and what the fall off rates were. And you start really understanding the path that people are taking, the falls, where people are exiting, and potentially where you need to make some changes within that portal or that site or that application. Oh, I need some water. Empathy is my key word for 2014, hands down. And that's, both in design and in leadership, and honestly in parenting too. I think empathy is the key to understanding your users and is one of the most important things you can do. And when I talk about empathy, that is not about feeling bad for them or having pity on them. It's about putting yourself in their shoes, about being an advocate for the user, and about understanding who they are, where they are, like in the process, and how they're trying to use your application. So, one tool that we use a lot of is this. It's kind of a day in the life. It's a simple timeline. You can draw this up on a whiteboard very easily. I do quite often. And this is really about understanding who and when people are using your application, where they're coming from, and where they're going to afterwards. And everything, all of this is really important. And all we do is start marching through the day. And so this is a really small one, just kind of for illustration purposes. At 7 o'clock in the morning, they get up and they check their phone and see that the meeting for the project update is moved. At 9 a.m., they log into their intranet and review the project status. And they start working on the updated document. At 12:30, they head to lunch and they forgot to send it to their boss. And so they grab the link from their phone and forward that over. In the mid-afternoon, they get an IM looking for the budget numbers for the project, and they can grab that out of the recent documents and send that over. And then, later that evening, post-dinner, they remember, a problem that was had on a community. And oh my God, that was the answer, and they can quickly post that back there. Now, maybe all of these don't totally apply to the solution of the problem at hand or the product that you're working on. But like say those three in the middle do. And it's important to know where they came from. Like what were they doing prior to interacting with your application? And where were they going afterwards? What are they doing with that information? And you need to help them through that process and through that path. So here's a little question for you. Personas are a pretty popular thing right now, and I'm just gonna read this yet again. It's kind of a fun one. Outside of work, Heather is a passionate food blogger. Her blog, Simply Delicious, gets over 50,000 hits per month. She checks Facebook about twice a week as a means of staying in touch with friends, but she does not let it become a distraction. She likes being updated through Facebook, but prefers catching up with friends in person. Heather enjoys having deep, meaningful connections with friends. Oftentimes, on the weekends, you can find her in a long, casual dress, with her hair in a ponytail, having brunch on a patio downtown in an eclectic cafe with her dogs at her feet, surrounded by her closest friends. Persona? No, it's a Match.com profile. I'd be lying if I didn't say that this was supplied to me by a client a couple years ago as a persona. And there's nothing actionable about this, not for what we're doing. Now, I was going to actually say, this is not a persona, and I was going to be a little bit more harsh about it. But it actually is a persona if your application is dealing with these types of things. But for us, for me, for right now, for the things I work on, not quite the case. This is kind of the other side of the spectrum. So One thing that we've been focusing more on are user types or user archetypes, and not even referring to them as personas. Personas are a fabulous tool, but what I've found more frequently lately is understanding user types, and specific to, you know, I don't know that I need to have fancy names. That for this particular tool, you know, we're working with content authors, approvers, readers, and administrators, and they have specific tasks and goals and needs out of the application. And so we just document just that. We don't need to get overly fancy or overly crazy with it. We then apply those to a scenario. So a scenario, you know, is a series of steps. I'm trying to get through this goal. And then we apply and say, hey, look, this scenario applies to these two user types. Inside of a scenario, maybe we have sub-steps. We entitled those hassle maps. In this case...
Hey, Byron, backing up just a tiny bit. So it seems like you might have hundreds of these as you were going out and profiling your organization, especially in a really large global federated organization. So how do you tackle this? How do you go about this, given that that's a pretty big problem to solve?
Yeah, so we, you know, like for this project, I think we had 10 total scenarios that we mapped to. And that's, I think, that's pretty good. Scenarios, you know, as the personas or as user types, need to map back directly to that value statement at the very beginning. You know, one of the pieces there was, you know, these are the three user experience goals that I didn't really talk to you on that one slide. But, you know, understanding what those key goals are, what the value statement is, what the actual problem is, and then only mapping to that. So yeah, there's hundreds, thousands of potential scenarios within any given organization. But keeping in tune to the exact needs of the project, what the exact problem statement is, you know, that's what we're really trying to map to, and keeping that top of mind at all times. You know, moving beyond scenarios into hassle maps. These are probably one of my more favorite pieces, and I have lots of favorites, just to be honest. But what we're doing in this is really cool. You know, we outline the current steps. So through the research, through watching people work, outline exactly what it takes to achieve a certain goal. So this was, you know, I think I need to order a laptop for a new employee. And currently, within that system, it was 13 steps. And those steps were both physical and, you know, computer-based. You had to kind of go through all of these. And as part of the project, we worked first with a utopia state, so an ideal state. Let's go to the far, far end of the spectrum and say, in an ideal world, how few steps could we make this, and what would that look like? And we narrowed that down to, you know, 6 steps or 5 steps. And then we kind of played this game of back and forth, how, you know, horse trading, and say, how many steps can we get this down to? It's a little, you know, game of name that tune. How few steps can we get this down to, knowing the technology limits of today, you know, what their systems look like, and kind of a realistic view into their world. And that goes for any specific company. And, you know, we said we can get that down to 8 steps. And we can do that in, we typically target, you know, what's the 3 to 9 month time frame? You know, so we really try to keep that actionable and real. And then take all of that and create a storyboard. These little mini vignettes that, you know, this was a 25-page document that had illustrations. It had some wireframe-y type things in it that showed, you know, 3 different characters interacting with each other as they move through the course of a day. So we created a little story that talked about how this gentleman and another woman, you know, working remote across the world, how they had to work on something and solve a problem as they worked through those scenarios and hassle maps and those characters within the play. And this is a great tool. Originally, we thought about making it a little movie, which would have been really cool as well. And this gets, you know, project buy-in, this gets executive buy-in. It starts to tell people exactly what you're trying to do, what the problems are, and what that ideal state could look like. Pretty cool stuff. Keep it simple, stupid. Avoid unnecessary features. This is really all about, you know, minimalist design doesn't mean, you know, too stark, right? Let's just not go too crazy with designs or overthink the problems. Sometimes that's the worst thing you could do, is actually try to over-engineer it or overthink what you're working on there. And definitely don't try to be too clever, as it usually backfires. So I'm going to put this up here. This is a hair embarrassing for me, so just gonna say that out front. As I was preparing for this, I was like, oh, this is cool. I'm gonna be in SharePoint conference. I'm gonna be talking to people. I should show some of my best work. And here I am, showing this. This was a couple years ago, probably more than a couple years ago, actually, so it's a good example in that sense. The client came to me, us, and said, I have this idea. And I want this to be a really easy interaction for people to understand. I want it to be so familiar that everybody gets it. So what I want it to be is I want it to be a picture of a library, because everybody knows what a library is. And that's kind of what our company intranet is. It's kind of a library. So I really want to think of it as a library. I actually want to call it the library. And what I want is above all of the books for it to be the departments. And I think it'd be really cool. They'll get it. They'll get it. And when you search, I want it to be a card catalog that slides out. Get it? Card catalog. Search. Yeah, I get it. I get it. And she goes, and I think it'd be really cool if like a librarian came out and shushed you. I'm like, okay, this is going crazy. this is crazy. And then they said, it didn't stop. That was the sad part. Is that they wanted a ghost to slide by on the screen. They actually wanted Casper the ghost. I couldn't show it on here because it was copyright stuff. But they wanted a ghost to slide across the screen if you'd been for too long. I'm like, okay, no. This has got to stop. We cannot have this conversation anymore. But we had to mock it up, right? Because sometimes you have to kind of show that you're like, no, this isn't going to work. Here's why. So we mocked it up, and we ran through all of this, and we had some really long, hard conversations, as you can imagine. They said, look, this isn't going to work. This isn't how people want to use websites. I get it. I get the idea. It's cute. But no, it's not going to work, and it's not an enterprise application. So happily, this is what we did, just to show that there is another side to it. You know, it's minimalist. It looks good. It's easy to use. But there is some fun to it, and I don't have it here, but there's the little twist thing over on the far right kind of rotates out. And that was a Silverlight application that we built. It was Silverlight back in those good days. And it rotated out, and it kind of did this whole parallax thing. It provided a kind of a sitemap navigation into apps of the site. So there was a little bit of fun. Just not. Are we there? All right. But just not the crazy stuff of going too far. All right. I guess I should say that the examples I showed here are, you know, visual design, which is the end. And this was an easy one to show. But this is as true for anything else. So within the user interactions, you know, don't overthink those. Let's try to keep those as simple as possible. Kind of like, how few steps can we get to? How few interactions can we get to solve this problem? Build in some delight. Have a little fun with it. Remember this guy? Ding! SharePoint sites that are easy to use and a pleasure to something. Seriously, creating a little bit of delight, having a little bit of fun is really key and really important for user engagement over the long term, right? So how do we do that? What, how do we create paths? And honestly,
for this,
how do we create sites that don't suck, more importantly? So let's talk about sucking and kicking ass. Has anybody seen the kick-ass curve before? Is this familiar? This is a pretty cool tool. This was initially created by Kathy Sierra and Dan Russell and on their blog, Creating Passionate Users. It's actually about 10 years old, but I think it's as important today as ever. So along the bottom, we have time. So brand new user, or I guess just starting out, and been using this for decades, eons, infinity, and beyond. On the, what is that, left, for you guys, we have ability, meaning that I'm just starting out. I'm struggling. I'm frustrated. I'm an expert user. I own this thing. Let's do it. Through the middle, we have a couple thresholds, right? So we have suck down below, and we have passion up above. So everything below the suck hold threshold means I hate this. Everything above passion means I love this. And everything in the middle is like, it's all right. No harm, no foul. bad experience, something like this. It takes me years, decades, to figure out how to use a tool. And finally, maybe, I can pass beyond that and start using this. So this, we think in terms of how long until I stop hating this. On the other side of that, a good one maybe quickly moves through and up into passion. And we think in terms of how soon can I start kicking ass. An even better one would to become in that neutral zone or even higher. So you never even hated it at the onset. So we've all seen this, we all know this, we learned it in grade school, high school, junior high, I don't know. We have Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? I like to think in terms of user's hierarchy of needs. It's cool. So in order for us to get to that delight or passionate or this point where I actually love something, I have to move through some stages first. It doesn't just happen. So first and foremost, a system, an application, a tool has to be functional. It has to work. And then it has to do so reliably, not just once in a while. Beyond that, it has to be usable. It has, you know, I have to be able to achieve my task reasonably well. And then after that, after all of that, then it can be delightful. Then I can start to have a little bit of fun with it. Then I can enjoy it. You know, you can do the best design in the world, award-winning design. Oh my God, look at it, it's amazing. But if it doesn't work, they're gonna flock away from it. They're gonna abandon like nobody's business. And at the very, very top is bliss. We all wanna be there. I don't know if we ever do, if we ever get there. So how do you bring in delightfulness? What can that look like? So once you get past those base stages, what can be delightful? This is one of those terms, it drives me nuts, but it is a term. So gamification, right? It's creating games out of the reward systems out of for your tools. But this one's actually a really cool one. So we had a client a year or so ago that three years ago. And they were moving from Lotus Notes to Outlook. They were moving from, the non-Microsoft stack to the Microsoft stack. And they had thousands, 100,000 employees that they need to train and change their, behaviors a little bit. And these weren't just employees. These were crotchety old scientists. And I say that in the most endearing way. People that had, they were 60 or 70 years old, a good chunk of them, and they just really had no desire to change. And that kind of created a culture of anti-change, sadly enough. So we created a learning center, a learning portal, where they had to go in and read these lessons. These lessons weren't anything fancy. They were actually the productivity hub that Microsoft provides, just regurgitated and made nicer looking and easier to access, right? We categorized them and broke them a portal out of that, a learning. We categorized people, right? So based on the personas, we knew that you were a certain person within a certain division, within a certain role or level within the company. We knew, the type of IT that you had, right? So we had access to all of that type of data. And we plugged that into the system, and we broke out lessons so that you had your own personalized path. I had a path being in design. Todd had a different path being in strategy. The scientist had a different path as a scientist. And we had certain lessons tagged to that. So as I took a lesson, that's great, that's cool, but we created this little horse race track across the top. So as I created a lesson, my little guy moved down the path, which is kind of fun. It's like, all right, that's neat. When the guy hit the end of the path, he jumped for joy. Well, that's kind of fun, right? We take little wins. Once he hit the end of the path, I could take a quiz, right? Just a short quiz. It was like 5 questions based on a couple things. Fairly easy. And then you could get the badge. And, there was a couple fun badges, like Word Wizard was one of them. My personal favorite, one I came up with, was OneNote Wonder, which is kind of fun. Thank you. And that was cool. and then on top of it, though, which really shook me, was a client called me one day, and she goes, Byron, I was explaining what we were doing, that they had these badges and certificates, and my coworker said it would be really great if we could print them off. And I was like, to do what with? And she's like, to hang in our cubes. And I'm like, oh my God, corporate America. And so we did it. And we saw, you know, like, I was like, do they really do this? And like a month later or 2 months later, I was out there and I was walking through the halls and I saw badges hanging up in people's cubes. Kind of blew my mind, but that was great. I was like, awesome. Well done. You guys are at least having a little bit of fun with that. So when we talk about building delight, you know, it's the small wins, it's the little pieces, it's making people feel good about what they did and making them want to go back and do it. So it's not a gross task that they have to do, but actually something that has a little bit of fun to it, that it's like, oh, yeah, I'd go back and do that. So number six, designing for the user experience. So this is getting into just a little bit of, you know, our formal walkthrough process, right? These are the different things that we really focus on. And so when we look at, you know, different sites and types of content that we're designing for, we try to put them into buckets. Right, and so in this case, we have, you know, you have different type of information that's going to be for me personally. We have collaboration information, we have organizational information. In this case, we also called out search as its own separate bucket. We have a couple different types of, say, collaboration sites, right? So we always break things out, and this is typically becoming a pretty common breakout, that we have work groups and projects and communities. We then take all of those and put them into not one of these. To me, this is not a wireframe, at least not a useful one. This is, like a page layout. It's boxes. It's blue boxes. To me, a wireframe is super detailed. It is a blueprint. If an architect came to me, and true story, I think this happened when I redid my basement, and gave me a blueprint that looked like this, I would only have so much trust in that. I want to see measurements. I want to see documentation. I want to see how this is actually going to be built out. So for us, we put things into wireframes. And these are, you know, true blue, black and white blueprints. They're fully documented from a design and user standpoint. And then as we move into the technical side, they are fully documented from a technical standpoint. It pseudo becomes not a functional spec, because that's old school, but kind of a functional spec, right? So that they know what they're building, how they're building it, and what they're doing. And design. Design is not colorized wireframes. I see that a little bit too often. Design is a craft, and we take design very seriously. We hang our hat on it. And design is, you know, the wireframes are a best guess for how things should be laid out. And then when we run that through design, things are going to change. They're going to tweak. They're going to move around a little bit. And that's a good thing, because that's another set of eyes, it's a different point of view, a different perspective on the user. And honestly, it really is what makes that first impression and makes that product sing. Two more. Test often with real users, back to the users. So early on, you know, we do the research, we get with those people. You know, kind of my rule of eights and eights and eights. So go back to them. Go back to them. You've got this product now. You've got a wireframe. You've got a paper prototype. You've got whatever it is. I almost don't care. Just go back to them and walk them through it, or have them walk through it. Just depends on where the product is in the area. In this case, we're doing an iPad application, and we had the four key stakeholders in the project. They didn't really want to open it up to other people, but we met with them and ran through, you know, three user tasks, three separate times. So different stages of the product, whether it was in wireframes or an actual application, we walked back through the pieces with them to make sure that we didn't miss anything, right? That their questions and their part was included within that process.
So Byron, those kind of like IT people, do you normally do this just with IT people, or do you open it up to the business?
Well, these aren't just IT, okay. Right? So, you know, when I talk about project team, I'm not just talking about IT. I think a project team needs to, again, incorporate aspects of the business, right? It's not always just one side. In this case, it was, you know, a gentleman from marketing, two people from IT, and one person from, I guess you'd say, records management, to understand how this application was going to be used. So just to throw up a couple of my favorites, because I think it is good to see tips and tricks. InVision is at the top for a reason. It's by far my favorite right now. And it provides, you know, you can upload. These are really just image-based click-throughs, but they're web-based. You can have interactive prototyping sessions with them. InVision, you just upload a series of images, tie them together with some hot links, and load them. It couldn't be simpler. It works great for desktop applications and as well as some mobile instances. The ones on bottom are more mobile focused. Proto.io is cool. I've used that on a series of tablet applications. And Flinto is probably the newest in the bunch and honestly kind of the funnest to use. I haven't actually used it for a client yet, but I've been using it personally. It's kind of just, again, fun to use. Delightful. Lastly, training and feedback. Make that easy. So training is a tricky one. When we do our designs and we build these portals, you know, we've been saying for years that you shouldn't have to train someone on this new portal. And I'd say that's mostly true. That training is tricky. That the design itself should be intuitive, right? That it should make sense to the user on how to do something. But what's often lost is why. Why should I do something? Why should I come here and why should I use this? So we like to create these little training videos, and I'm just gonna, you wanna drop that over? I'm gonna jump to this video. Oh, canceled. This video here, and this is, I don't have any voiceover on this yet, but this is a sample of a training video. You know, so we are talking about what these pieces are, about, you know, maybe what's, you know, the, you know, aspects of a site. These are typically a couple minutes long, you know, minute and a half long. We like to put voiceover with them, you know, so that there is a nice voice talking to you. We load these onto the portal for people, and these just outline the various aspects to the site. You know, what is it? Why is it there? And how do I use it? Or why do I use it? You know, what can I put in these places? And how is this site going to benefit me? That's what people really want to use. They know how to post to an activity feed. For the most part, they know how to upload a document. But they don't always understand why or where or how this stuff is going to be used, kind of the best practices.
And these could also be used as part of an awareness program?
Yeah, absolutely.
In front of a launch, for example?
Yeah, get these out early, so kind of as a teaser. Like here's a little teaser of our new site. Get people excited about it. All right, let's switch back. It doesn't get any more exciting than that. And lastly with this piece is feedback. So this is a quick screenshot of our actual intranet, or a piece of it. And you know, we use this tool, it's called User Voice. And it's a feedback mechanism. So it allows you to, you know, if there's a problem with the page, you can write something up on it and click the button to include a screenshot of that page. There's also an area for, you know, future enhancements or new ideas. And I think this is really important. So it's getting that feedback from users once it's launched and making that as easy as possible. You know, it's not an email DL that they have to grab a screenshot and write an email to. It's lost. By the time that they've switched over to email, they saw that note from their project or their boss or whatever, and boom, it's gone. So keeping it within context to the site is really critical. So before I dive into the case studies, we're about halfway through. And I just want to make sure, are there any questions or anybody have issue with anything I've said? Yeah, there's, so the question, I've been asked to repeat the question. So is there a tool that we use to create those webinars and videos? You know, that one in particular is using just straight up After Effects and Final Cut or Premiere. So both, you know, video editing tools. We are designers, so we take that seriously. In the past, I've also used Camtasia. It's a great, you know, screen recording and all that stuff. Just to, you know, talk about tools and their use, Camtasia is a fabulous tool also for the user research. That you can record the full session of what someone's saying. You can use the camera that's built into the computer to capture the person, and you can capture the screen and what they're doing. It's fabulous. It's fabulous. So Camtasia is a great tool. There's an Adobe tool that's really about training and some of that stuff too. Maybe someone, Captivate, that's it. I've used that in the past as well. Excellent, so we're gonna jump back over here as well. Gonna hit that. Okay, so just gonna, got two clients here that I wanna walk through, two projects recently in the past year that I'm showing for slightly different reasons. And this is really to show how some of those steps, some of those guidelines can be put into play, and how different clients or different situations you need to adapt for some different pieces. Danner was a really cool project. They were all in with getting user support, user buy-off, a little bit of crowdfunding or the crowdsourcing of information. And in particular, we were doing, you know, we'd done the focus groups, we'd met with people, we'd gone through all of that, and we had outlined, you know, we'd understood who they were, where they're at, and the very systems that they had. And they were trying to bring together, you know, 300 companies into one unified front for one of the first times, like really make that happen. So we'd outlined like 91 navigational items. It was ridiculous. It's huge. And so we said, well, what we should do is do a card sort. Right? Simple exercise. Let's do a card sort. Let's get 15, 20 people together. Maybe we can do it online and send it out to a couple more and get people's opinion on this. And they came back to us and said, well, why don't we just send it out to everyone? Why not? Let's do it. And so we did. We sent it out to 50,000 employees. Biggest card sort I've ever done, hands down. We got 2,600 participants to complete the entire thing. We had a total of 9,000 participants that at least started the process, right? So, and that, you know, so that just getting through these statistics, right? 26 minutes of average time. That's pretty amazing. We had a ton of data. It took about 3 weeks. We constantly hit them with emails, you know, every week that said, hey, go fill this out, go fill this out, go fill this out. It's like a little internal marketing campaign. And in the end, it was pretty amazing to look at that data and how closely that aligned. You know, once you overlay all of it on top, it was pretty amazing. And coming out of it, we got three top-tier groupings. You know, two groupings of 8 and one of 16, just so we can kind of see what the breakdown was. We then took those, you know, as a project team. Oh, here we go. Took those as a project team and put that into kind of a base level sitemap, base level IA. And then we blew that out with the other 84, whatever. I'm not a math guy. Navigational terms. I'm a designer, Jesus. And then we took that into the wireframes. Right? And we put those up top, and we looked at, you know, kind of a structure for how this is going to play out. And then we rolled that into the final design. You know, fully mobile, fully responsive, in all devices across the board. All right, this is going to drive me nuts. It's all like set to auto go. No, we're just going to do it. The second one is an intranet portal that we did for MGM out of Macau. And for them, they were more focused on what's our vision. We're not so interested in you talking to too many of our users. Sure, talk to a couple of them, but let's not go crazy. We really want to hear what you have to say, and we want to know your path and the breakdown of how we're going to put this together. How does this project fit into the larger ecosystem of the bigger project? So you saw this earlier. This was for that project. We broke that down into some user archetypes. Again, we didn't need to go crazy with the personas or who these people were. Let's just be very tasked and very focused on what we're trying to do here. You saw the scenarios earlier, right? What are the steps? What are the pieces? And how do we break that down into a consumable piece? And in this case, the hassle maps looked a little different. But they were still the subtasks that were needed to create the larger task of the scenario. And then just a quick walkthrough of what a storyboard can start to look like. You know, I showed one screen earlier, but this was a storyboard we did for these guys that really does carry you through that vignette, the story of and the path of how someone's going to be using the application. The wireframes targeted towards individual users. You can see that this wireframe is applicable to those two user types. And finally, again, taking that to the end portal design and having full mobile access to it. Yeah, go ahead and switch. So with that, even cereal needs its milk. Just because it comes in a box doesn't mean it's ready to use. You know, we each like, sure, you can eat your cereal dry. I prefer not to. I like whole milk. Not everyone does. I like raisins. Not everyone does. Right? There's this personality piece to it. And so how do we get there? And I'd say that SharePoint is even the same way. SharePoint out of the box, it's a great platform. It's a great start. But how do we make that our own? How do we own that? How do we make that our piece, our SharePoint, our portal? And that's kind of what we're talking about up there. This is that plug part at Blue Rooster. This is that getting out of the box. So how do we get out of the box? Time to break out of the box. So let's switch over again. So we've been working on this for the last year or so. And and we've come up with a little bit of a solution that says we don't need to do things necessarily the way that SharePoint wants us to. We can make this a little easier to use, but it's still flexible. We can still make it yours. So we've taken all these pieces that we've been working on and put those together in a little bit of a solution. So we can expedite projects, get things done faster, and reuse items from project to project. One of those is, you know, this navigation bar. So we have a global navigation, and we've broken that out a little differently. Right? We haven't... welcome, James. Let's say who you are first. We've got a tour on there. We're bringing in this case, it's a site feed. It works with the Yammer feed as well. You know, in the case of the Yammer feed, we didn't like the one that was out there, so we built another one. It's actually really cool. You should go check it out. It's in the marketplace. That's another plug. But as we get on the side, we see personalization. We see my tasks. We see company events coming up on the side. We see recent documents, and these are mine pulled from across the organization. Down towards the bottom, we see a company spotlight. This is where the company has the ability to push out their information. So the portal homepage is mine. It's personally my site. There's still the area where a company can put information out and get that message sung beyond just an activity feed post. Just to show that it is flexible, right? We can change. We have a slightly different header up here, slightly different color mechanism, slightly different layout. We've got a couple other pieces here. Rather than my task, we're using, you know, an Instagram feed, right? It's customizable, and we can tweak that for the needs of the company that we're working with. To dive into that navigation piece, you know, I earlier talked about different types of sites. So when we work on sites and we work on categorizing these, we do so for the user as well. It's not just sites that I follow. That's only so useful. But it's actually breaking those into projects and communities and work groups. And it's allowing me to edit those. So I can pin different projects up there. I can manage the links that are there. I can put my quick links here. And then we've kind of renamed that whole My Sites piece in the far right there. You know, we've got mailbox and email and calendar and newsfeed. And we kind of rejigged that a little bit. Here is a different version of that, though. In this case, we do have sites I follow and documents I follow and a little bit more of a personal feed. Again, customizable. We don't all like exactly the same thing. Moving into just a project site, this is just to kind of show how it applies throughout the entire site. So again, you still have that global navigation at the top. It's always easy to get back to where you came from and dive off to go somewhere else. Other than that, we're using a lot of the same pieces. You know, a simple out-of-the-box timeline, the project feed, recent documents, and things like that. But how is that all stylized? How does that become part of the overall experience of the portal? And we think that's pretty important. And again, all devices, fully accessible. I'm not going to dive into the whole, you know, responsive and device channeling and how we access all of these things. It's for other people, other sessions. There's been a bunch of them. But we adhere to all of those, right? So certain things are accessible on the phone. Certain things are accessible on a tablet. Everything's accessible on the desktop. So with that, I think we're doing pretty good. I'm going to start closing things out. So if you think good design is expensive, you should look at the cost of bad design. This is a great quote, actually, just fairly recently, by none other than the CEO of Jaguar. Yeah, fairly fitting. And who's Blue Rooster? Blue Rooster, this is a subset of our team the other day. We did a little Mad Men Appreciation Day. The cigar and whiskey is real. And we are an eclectic group of designers, technologists, strategists, business people, all united under SharePoint. Not just SharePoint, but mostly SharePoint. Any questions?
It's not Photoshop, by the way.
That is real.
That's real.
And it was really hard to see through that mask. Are there any questions, anything about what we presented, about a project that you're working on? I'm happy to just have at it.
So online card sorts, I usually use Optimal Sort.
Yes, that's what we used as well.
That's what you used, okay.
Fabulous tool.
Yeah, that and TreeJack, which is also in this suite.
What's the other one?
TreeJack. It's
TreeJack.
Reverse card sorts.
Oh,
so
nice.
Once you have that taxonomy established,
yeah,
you validate it.
Oh, that's fabulous. Thank you. I got something out of it. Sweet.
If I had a t-shirt, I'd give it to you.
Totally. I don't have another one. I can't give you one. All right. Well, thank you so much. If you don't want to ask a question here, oh.
What are the projects you're presenting? What's the sample timeline?
Sample timeline?
Yeah,
you know, requirements, scenario. Yeah. Right now, we're looking at kind of a... Perfect. So Danaher was a much longer one. It was a big project. We're, you know, a year into that and getting ready to launch now. So that's a longer one. The MGM one, that was like 3 or 4 months start to close. Right? And so I'd say kind of a 3 to 6 month is standard from a, and that's from, you know, research and information and kickoff through some sort of build or launch and getting something out the door.
We're going to be at our booth all day today and tomorrow, so if anybody wants to stop by and say hi, happy to answer questions there too.
Question? To the platform, like to the SharePoint. Well, on-prem, not so much.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. So do you, with all the customizations that we do, do we run into problems when they change the version, right? When they make a new push to an update? You know, on-prem, we've run into less problems, and you can plan for those a lot more. SharePoint Online, yes. Yes, we have. They're typically small and, you know, quickly fixable. But yes, you do run into some of the problems. You know, when they, you know, one of our dev leads came to me the other day and goes, Byron, they changed the ID to the whatever he was targeting, right? So at the DOM level, he was targeting these two IDs, and they changed the name of them. Like, ah, Jesus. You know, so we just have to go back. We have to realign that. We have to fix that and push out the new update. They're pretty minimal. Yep. So as Todd said, we're going to be at the booth all afternoon, so feel free to stop by, chat. If you want to learn more, see real demos, whatever, we're there. Thank you.